Well, where are all the pastors? When Paul Mallard took on the role of the FIEC president, he used his first article in the FIEC magazine to ask exactly that question. He highlighted the importance of the role of the pastor in the health of God's people. But then he asked, where is the next generation of ministers coming from? Within the FIEC, he said that the number of churches who were looking for ministers was far greater than the number of men who were looking for churches. An editorial in Evangelicals Now a year earlier had confirmed that three times as many churches were looking for pastoral help as there were men looking to enter a pastorate. I wonder how many churches you know who are currently looking for a pastor. I'm sure the majority of us could name at least one church, and some churches that we know of who've been looking for some time. You may well have heard of the 938 group. That's a group that takes its name from one of the verses that we read tonight from Matthew. And it's a group concerned with identifying and recruiting and training gifted and godly men and women for gospel work. And they held a consultation day at the end of 2003 on the subject of training for ministry. And the reason for that day was because of the startling statistic that had emerged, that the average age of a Free Church minister today is over 50. And they identified some areas of concern relating to training, to information, to mentoring, to funding, and to ongoing support. Now, many other articles and papers have been written on the subject of why the lack of young men going into ministry. And in particular, there's been a concern to discover, are there any barriers for young men entering full-time ministry today? Because whilst it's clearly God who equips and gifts and calls, it's a church that recognises and trains and sends. And the church, therefore, has a responsibility to remove any artificial barriers that are not inherent in the role itself. But the question really was, were those barriers that were being suggested in these various articles and papers, were they the real ones that young men were facing? And so the burden of the survey that we're going to look at tonight, some of the results that we're going to share, was that there was really a vital source of information that hadn't been tapped, because no research had actually been done amongst young men themselves. And if there was a survey of this nature, would it identify from the young men the same barriers to entering ministry that the church was seeking to address in coming up with some solutions? What would young men themselves highlight as the key issues? And it seemed critical to find that out, because it may confirm the preconception of the things that the church was seeking to address, but it might also identify some new areas, or it might highlight some areas that needed particular focus. Because in the scarce resource of church and church organisations today, we of course need to focus our attention on the areas that need most addressing. So three of us got together and we worked up a proposal to survey our peers on the issues of full-time pastoral ministry. Now, we took some soundings from some senior evangelical men to establish that this was actually going to be something worthwhile, that nothing like it existed, and that it would be a valuable input into the debate. And the three of us, I guess, were representative, really, of the young men that we were trying to survey. One of us, Richard Lacey, has been in ministry less than 5 years. Until recently, he's been an assistant at Kensington in Bristol. Another guy, Jonathan Dyer, is preparing to enter training. He's currently an elder in Chessington. And then myself, who I guess I probably class as seriously considering ministry at the moment. Now, the survey was carried out during the summer of 2005. And Jonathan Stephen really gave his sponsorship and personal support to the survey, and it was launched with the backing of Affinity. And we're really targeting young men who had been who had started out in full-time pastoral ministry relatively recently, who are in some sort of training, or who are at the stage of considering whether full-time ministry was what God was calling them to. So what I'm going to share with you this evening are some of the results, the top-line results of the survey. Not all of the areas, but just some of the areas that we've particularly looked at relating to calling and to training and to sending of young men. If you were here for Ian Herring's talk when he came and talked about Affinity, you'll know that there's been a table talk published already and an article in Evangelicals Now recently. And we're hoping that the full report will be available next month, Healthy Children Allowing, that is. But as we go through the data tonight, I'm an actuary, so I love data, but I know that for most of you, data is a bit of a nightmare. So as we go through the data, hopefully it's not just a case of looking at some charts and numbers. I really wanted to use to pose a few questions for us as a church, because data is just data unless it's acted on. And the whole purpose of the survey was to provoke some thought and to start to raise some questions and some challenges. So we'll do that as we look through the results. So I've got a handout for you. I'm afraid I went for colour photocopying, which was so expensive I had to stop at 20. So you might be sharing, I'm afraid. Just to talk about those who responded to begin with, we got 400 replies in total, which itself was an encouraging number. And I think it showed really that young men felt this was an issue where they wanted to provide some input. And the majority of the survey was a kind of tick box style, I guess. And but about 80% actually provided comments, quite extensive comments sometimes on the back of the survey. I don't know about you, but when I'm filling in a survey, I do the minimum possible, really, tick the boxes and don't fill too much in on the back. So again, it kind of backed up the fact that young men did feel a lot of concern about this general issue. Our target group was, as I say, young men, 21 to 40. I guess that's young men. And the vast majority did fall into that age bracket. The survey covered the whole of the UK, and there were just a few overseas correspondents, although those were normally UK exiles. Nearly half those responding were from the southeast, and the survey covered Free Church and Anglican men, with about two-thirds coming from a Free Church background. And the majority of those were classing themselves as coming from an independent evangelical church. And I'd say the next largest grouping was probably Grace Baptist. There's a reasonable spread of men from different sized congregations, although I'd say probably skewed toward the larger churches, with about 60% coming from congregations of more than 100. That second slide, the respondents' profile, just shows how people broke down in terms of where they were on their journey, if you like, towards full-time ministry. And the table just shows those figures. Those who are really swift with the numbers will know that that count doesn't quite add up to 400. That's because some of the men recorded themselves as being in more than one situation. For example, somebody might have been still seriously considering full-time ministry, but also in training as well. But as you can see, there's a reasonable spread with those who are going right through from more than 5 years in ministry down to those who were probably uncertain about the issue. One positive thing here is that there's approximately 130 men or so who are seriously considering or uncertain about ministry. That's actually positive, to find 130 men who are, if you like, potential ministers, and also another kind of 130 or so who are actually in the process of being in training and actually seeking to go into ministry. And these guys were really asked for their views on a wide range of issues, including kind of the role of minister, things like pay and finance, the church leadership. But we're particularly going to look at some areas on gifts and calling and on training. So the top of page 2 of your handout, they asked then a number of questions about gifts and calling. And member asked really simply to agree or disagree with the statement. And they also had the option of neither agreeing nor disagreeing, which again is why they don't add up to 100, each of those boxes. There's a couple of positive results in that table of data that I'll just highlight. That third question down, Christian leaders recognise my gifting. Only 2% said that hadn't been the case. So that was positive to know that Christian leaders were looking out for the gifts that God had given to young men. And also only 5% were able to say that they felt some sense of call, but that hadn't been recognised by others. But I think some of the two questions that I've highlighted there in the blue are the ones that perhaps stand out. There were nearly 30% of men who said they were confused over what constitutes a call to full-time ministry. And remember, this includes people who are actually in ministry themselves. And we'll break that down a little bit more in a minute. But also, there were only 46% who said that they felt a special call to full-time ministry. So let's just look at that in a little more detail. Now, I've got the really fun charts here, which are nicely coloured. As I say, actuary's dream, non-actuary's nightmare. So Now let's just try and explain how these graphs work. Each of the bars across represents men in different categories of, or different stages with regard to full-time ministry. So at the top you've got those who are more than 5 years in ministry, going down to those who are uncertain. So at the top you've got those who are kind of further down the road, really, with regard to pastoral ministry. And the orange and the yellow are really those who've agreed with the statement. And the kind of mauve and blue colours are those who've disagreed. And I think what you can see there is a kind of diagonal pattern, where you've got sort of heavy orange and yellow at the top, going down to heavier purple and blue at the bottom. Keep it in nice, simple terms. What that's really saying in this particular question is that those who have been more than 5 years in full-time ministry would say, yes, I have had a special call to full-time ministry, whereas those who are uncertain are much less positive about that. And that's really what you kind of expect. This question backs up the sort of result that you would anticipate getting. If we move on to the top of page 3, we get the question of, I'm confused over what constitutes a call. And again, I think you can see there a sort of diagonal pattern, but a slightly different shape. Now, you've got 80% there in of those who've been more than 5 years in ministry who said that, no, I disagree, I do know what constitutes a call. I think what's surprising is that there's still 10% who've been in ministry more than 5 years who felt they were confused over the issue of call. But the really interesting result, I think, is down the bottom, with those seriously considering or those uncertain. There were 40% of those seriously considering ministry who felt they were confused. And 55%, more than half of those who are uncertain, were confused about the issue of call. And if that's the case, then I'd suggest that this is really quite a significant barrier in getting into ministry. Because either by the time these guys get into training or into ministry, they become unconfused about the issue. They've kind of moved on and progressed. Or actually they remain confused and they remain uncertain and they remain in those bottom categories. So dealing with this issue did seem to be one of the key barriers to overcome. Because even one in four of those who are either in training or preparing to enter training were also confused about this issue of call. And a number of men who provided comments in this area felt that this was a key reason for men not going into ministry. And it centres really, I guess, on how far the call to ministry is an objective thing or a subjective thing or both. One young minister highlighted the crux of the dilemma. And he said, the question of what constitutes a call to the ministry is very important. People tend to emphasise the subjective and ignore the objective advice of others, or vice versa. Where does the balance lie? Is he often given advice, don't enter the ministry if you can do anything else? Is that helpful and biblical advice? Equally, isn't it a mistake to approach the ministry in the same way as any other job? And one man said how this dilemma over call really impacted his own considerations of future ministry. He said, there is a lack of men entering because of a lack of clarity on what constitutes a call. I regard a call as possessing appropriate gifts, recognised by others, having the personal desire to enter full-time ministry and the encouragement of my elders to send me on to full-time ministry. However, my elders wanted, on the one hand, to get to the point at which they could say definitely, yes, we think you are gifted and will make a suitable minister. Yet, on the other hand, they wanted more urgent pushing of myself forward to know I was definitely committed. The two views are opposing, since I waited for their encouragement to go without pushing myself forward, while they waited for me to come forward before they encouraged and sent. I think he went on to say that we'd have been there until eternity unless God had intervened and done something about that situation. So really what I would say to us as a church is that sorting out the whole issue of calling is critical. Really understanding what the man should expect and also what part the church plays in helping a young man recognise God's call. And as a church, we have a part to play in that. You know, what part the subjective feelings, what part desires, what part gifts and equipping? What about the gifted but reluctant individual? Or what about the keen but flawed individual? And so you can begin to see these things are eminently practical. We need, of course, both to avoid sending those that God is not calling, but to ensure we do send those he clearly is. Do we need to preach for a call as much as we would for a conversion? Is the advice of stay out of the ministry if you can do anything else, is that helpful and wise for today? Or does it stifle passion and cause stagnation? How should we know if God is calling us? These are real issues that we need to work through so that we know how we should be thinking about our own lives and the lives of our fellow church members. Well, let's just move on to training and the table there at the bottom of page 3. Because I guess some of the questions here were geared towards how the church encourages men to work out their call. And the top question shows that almost 70% of men felt their churches were committed to seeking out and training men, although there were 20%, one in five, who didn't agree that was the case. There were just over 50%, just over half, who were being mentored by Christian leaders. In answer to the question, do you have enough preaching opportunities, about three quarters said that they did, and a slightly lower percentage felt that they had regular feedback on their preaching. But despite those relatively high figures, over one in three felt there was a reluctance to give young men opportunities, preaching opportunities, in case they failed. And then perhaps not surprisingly, only one in four men felt there were enough assistant or apprentice positions for young men to learn and develop. If we move on to page 4, we'll just examine this question about my church is committed to seeking out and training younger men. Because overall 70% said that that was the case, their church was committed to this. And the most positive response you can just see in the middle there is for those in training and preparing to enter training. And that result's probably understandable on the basis that those men will have received, one assumes, some encouragement and have reached that stage through the support of their church. Perhaps most surprising to me on this was that over 30% of those who'd been more than 5 years in ministry disagreed that their church was committed to seeking out young men for future ministry. Some of those who started to comment on this area said that the proactivity of churches in seeking out young men also tied in, I guess, with this subject of call. One guy said that if lads aren't tried out, discipled and given detailed feedback, how will they get any sense of call? There needs to be a discerning willingness to seek out the men God is calling. Or another guy said, maybe the church is not taking seriously its role in the calling of ministers. Personally, I found people would not give me advice or opportunity until I said I thought I was called to the ministry. I think this is the wrong way round. The church should take the initiative. And then one other guy said, I was privileged to be a member of a church that actively recruited young men for full-time paid gospel ministry. In my opinion, too many churches, and especially church leaders, are nowhere near proactive enough in implementing 2 Timothy 2:2 and tend to wait for someone to approach them or expect someone to have a sense of call. And we'll have a look back at 2 Timothy 2:2 in a moment. The bottom chart just breaks down this question of, I believe there's a reluctance to give young men preaching opportunities. Because 35% overall had said there was a reluctance to give opportunities. And again, perhaps the categories that stand out here are that over 50% of those who've been in ministry 5 years or more felt there was that reluctance. And those seriously considering ministry also felt it was something of an issue. It's interesting if you compare these results with the previous question, that although over 60% of men seriously considering ministry felt their leaders viewed this nurture of young men as a priority, there's still this significant minority who felt that there's a reluctance to give opportunity. And lots of comments that we had really expressed concerns about the training up of a new generation of pastors. One guy said that my greatest concern is whether leaders are actively seeking to develop and train new leaders and provide them with sufficient opportunities to grow and mature. And then in my experience, there's very little encouragement of young men to take up ministry roles and also very little investment to train up leaders. There are also fewer opportunities as a whole for young men to exercise preaching gifts. I was willing, available to preach, but there was no network to link to churches with the need, to the young men with the gifting and the willingness. Some did record very positive experiences about the fact that their churches have been very supportive. One man who was in training said that he'd been encouraged by his pastor, who allows me opportunities in preaching, leadership and pastoral roles. And I believe this is key in young men being encouraged into ministry. It'd be helpful actually if you could just turn back to 2 Timothy 2 and verse 2 there. In some ways I think that 2 Timothy 2:2 is a very neglected verse, a verse perhaps we kind of skip over. 2 Timothy 2, verse 2 says, Paul saying, speaking to Timothy, says, "The things you have heard me say in the presence of many witnesses," here's the key part, "entrust to reliable men who will also be qualified to teach others." And the verse shows that one of the roles Timothy had was to entrust the things he had heard onto reliable men who would then be qualified to teach others. In other words, Paul expects Timothy to have an ongoing role for training up and passing on the message of the gospel to other suitable men. So training up of others for ministry was not an optional part of Timothy's job description, but it was inherent to his role. So a church or a group of elders not seeking to develop others for ministry, then we're simply not fulfilling part of our New Testament mandate. And that's why really the apprentice scheme that we're running from September is such a positive move, because it begins to take 2 Timothy 2:2 seriously. And I want just to make a couple of challenges at this point. The first question asks whether the church in general was committed to seeking out and training young men. And I want to suggest we need to be seeking out young men. During our research for the survey, one of us discussed the issue of training with Vaughan Roberts, who's the minister in Oxford. He's a leading Anglican evangelical and he's one of the leaders of 938. And he described one difference between Anglicans and independents being the way they went about seeking men for ministry. And I think this is quite helpful for us as we think about this. And he described it using a fishing analogy. And he said the Anglicans kind of trawl their net and see what young men they catch, but the independents sort of wait for them to float to the surface and just kind of emerge. Now that's something of an oversimplification, but I think to some extent that's generally true. There is a kind of mentality that can sink in that doesn't really expect God to be calling men regularly. And so that when he does, it's a kind of rare event that takes us by surprise and we're not quite sure what to do with it. But actually we should be proactively giving opportunities, testing, developing gifts, and challenging one another over God's call upon our lives. But secondly, let me also suggest that we need to be willing to provide opportunity and feedback. There was a perception, at least among a number in the survey, that there is a reluctance to give young men a chance to preach. And it's understandable why there might be a reluctance, you know, if we're honest. Perhaps we're uncertain over the quality or the accuracy or even the wisdom of what might be said. It's a bit risky having a young man speak. Now, we don't want a situation where there's no wisdom over who's given that opportunity, but we must be prepared to take some risks, to allow a young man to try, even if the exposition does turn out to be bad, or the composition is poor, or frankly, the sermon's not very good. Because how many established ministers were pretty rough when they started out, and yet they needed those opportunities? We need to be willing to hear some bad sermons from time to time in the interest of allowing men to develop latent gifts. And also let me say that young men really need our feedback as well. They're wanting to learn what is good and what is not so good about what they said. A thank you on the door is appreciated, but it doesn't really help a young man sort of develop and improve in their preaching. We should be looking for young men to be wanting to preach the best they possibly can. John Chapman is an Australian evangelist, and he talks in preaching about trying to make it an ace down the centre line every time. And that should be the aim of the preacher and the young man seeking to kind of develop his serve, if you like, as he tries to develop his preaching. He's looking for comments, and they'll only improve with those constructive comments from us. Now, maybe on the door afterwards is not the best place, just after they've spoken. But some days later, just let them know what you found helpful in what they said, and then maybe what you didn't understand, or an area where you felt they could have elaborated a bit, or where they overmade their point. And I'm convinced that most of us can help a young preacher, because we all listen, I guess, to, 100 plus sermons a year on average? You know, so we can all help a young man and develop in his preaching and speaking. C.H. Spurgeon said, "We want again Luther's, Calvin's, Bunyan's, Whitfield's, men fit to mark eras, whose names breathe terror into our enemies' ears. We have dire need of such. They're the gifts of Jesus Christ to the church, and they will come in due time. He has power to give us back again a golden age of preachers, when the good old truth is once more preached by men whose lips are touched as with a live coal from off the altar. Now, I'm sure we'd all agree with Spurgeon's comments in that quote. I'm sure we all long for a generation of men called by God and equipped by the Spirit, preaching in his authority, changing a church and a nation. You can just turn back to Matthew 9:38. Because in Matthew 9:38, Christ gave us a solution to the issue. He urged us in that verse to ask the Lord of the harvest, therefore, to send out workers into his harvest field. And a key responsibility, as we come to pray week by week, is to pray for workers to be raised up. That is a key thing that we should be praying for week after week. Christ has commanded this of us. And we need to be praying unselfishly too for churches without pastors, for those, for Bible colleges, for those in training, and for those seeking to know God's calling. We cannot create preachers. Only God can, of course. But tonight, let's make this a particular focus in our prayers as we ask God to send out workers into his harvest field. But I want to conclude tonight by saying that the responsibility doesn't just end there. Because in the very next verse, Christ sends out those same ones he has just been telling to pray. And isn't that kind of principle repeated time over in the Bible? It is pray and act. Ask God and do what we can. I think Oliver Cromwell was the one who put it memorably, and he said, trust God and keep your powder dry. And this is what we must do. As we pray for workers to be raised up, then we must also identify and train and support and send. And if appropriate, and it's God's call, then we need to go as well. Training and sending is a really costly business for a church. It is a costly business, and we should be just aware of that. There's potentially, of course, a financial burden, and we should be willing to invest in people. And there's a time commitment too, mentoring and reviewing and coaching and developing. And the sending church pays a big price because they let go somebody who is clearly a gifted teacher to serve elsewhere. Maybe they lose in the process a youth leader or a home group leader or somebody who's been making a positive impact on the church. But we should also say it must be one of the most exciting things that a church ever does, in sending out someone into full-time ministry elsewhere. And God will honour those who honour him by sending out their best to serve elsewhere. Well, hopefully you've seen that there is a particular need today. There is a lack of young men going into full-time ministry. It's not all doom and gloom. There are men going into ministry. There are men in training. And, we're blessed ourselves to have two guys who are going to be apprenticing with us next year. But there are some issues that need to be overcome, not least of which is this clarity around calling, how to identify God's call, and how to help those working the issue through. But there's this big responsibility on us as well to seek out and to train. And 2 Timothy 2:2 makes it clear this isn't kind of an optional extra for the church, but it is something that we must be doing. Now we trust, having completed this survey, that some of the results will act as prompts to individual churches to think through the issues. You'll notice I've not given you any great blueprint for the answers tonight. And that's not my intention, really. The survey didn't set out to produce a whole schedule of solutions, but really to start to make us think and really to be committed about getting young men into ministry today. And so I trust that it's just at least started to warm you to that task. So that through our prayers and our encouragement, through our financial support and through our hearts, we will see a new generation of young men serving God in pastoral ministry.